Good afternoon and welcome to the first Saturday with Katie Hannon. On today's programme, are we in the foothills of a second wave of the virus in Ireland? And are pubs and restaurants taking the hit for an under-resourced contact tracing system? We talked to NPHET's Professor Philip Nolan. And tens of thousands of workers in Dublin laid off again due to the lockdown. We ask Housing Minister Dara O'Brien if it's time to reimpose the rent freeze and restore the full PUP payment. All that coming up after the news with Susan Jackson. Thanks for that, Susan. 51551 if you want to get in touch with the programme. It's Saturday at rte.ie for emails and Saturday and at Saturday RTE on Twitter. I'm joined today on the line now by Professor Philip Nolan, Chair of NPHET's Modelling Advisory Group. And in studio with me, I have Housing Minister Fianna Fáil's Dara O'Brien, Sinn Féin's Housing Spokesperson Ona O'Brien, Social Democrats co-leader Róisín Shortall and Donal O'Keefe, CEO of the Licensed Vintners Association. Now we'll get to political reaction in a moment, but first I'm joined by Professor Philip Nolan. Thanks for joining me this afternoon, Professor Nolan.
Not at all, Katie. Delighted.
I think you put the heart crossways on a lot of us this week, Philip, when you gave your assessment of the current situation and what you were seeing in your modelling before we ever got to these new restrictions. You said you were more concerned than you were at any point since late April.
Well, that's true. I mean, looking back over the last 5 days, we've seen an average 260 cases a day. We're growing at between 5 and 7% per day. So those numbers will double every 10 to 14 days unless we fully take on board the advice and enter into the spirit of the advice and restrictions that government decided yesterday to really limit our contacts and starve this opportunity, or this virus of opportunities to transmit. We're facing into a very worrying scenario. We should be frightened of this virus, quite frankly. It spreads quickly. It kills people. And we really have to take it seriously over the next 3 weeks in order to bring those case numbers back under control and protect people and protect our priorities.
And although it's Dublin that has been put on this level 3 plus, if we want to put it that way, this is a national call out to people to take it seriously, because there are worrying trends right around the country, aren't there?
Correct. I mean, Dublin is in a particularly vulnerable position. The incidence in Dublin is really 3 times what it is in the rest of the country. We're twice the national average, but of course Dublin itself is bringing up the national average. So if you compare Dublin with the remaining 25 counties, the incidence in Dublin is 3 times the rest of the country. So we in Dublin really need to take this advice very seriously, and that's why we're under particular restrictions. But there is no room for complacency in the rest of the country. They're on a worrying trajectory. So this is a call out, you're quite correct, across the entire country, basically over the coming weeks, to see half the number of people that we've been seeing in the preceding weeks, to prioritise our contacts to those that matter most to us, and to be really careful when it comes to the basics around distancing and hand hygiene and the wearing of face coverings. Be really careful when we do encounter our priority contacts.
There was reports today in the Irish Times that some members of NPHET were anxious to move Dublin to level 4, that they felt it was that serious and that urgent. Would you have been of that mind?
Well, to be clear, I mean, what would you expect in NPHET when we're faced with a situation? We discuss what's the appropriate response. We discuss, is that response enough or too much? So there is a very significant over hours long technical discussion about were these measures appropriate. The consensus view was absolutely that the appropriate measures for Dublin were level 3 and for the remainder of the country to remain at level 2. And one thing I do really need to say is the characterisation of that discussion in the article is not my experience. There's never been a circumstance under which NPHET says, well, we would like to give this advice, but we don't think government will accept it. NPHET gives its advice irrespective of what it thinks the reaction is going to be, and then it is a matter, appropriately, for government to decide whether it wants to take that advice in full or modify that advice. So there's no sense in which NPHET runs apprehensive as to whether their advice will be well received or not. And the consensus view was definitively that level 3 was
level 3 with some extra restrictions, as we know. And
I don't think that's the correct characterization. I think this is an expression of the level 3 of the government's framework, in which there are some options. And you're right, the kind of harsher end of the options were chosen.
But just as you were saying there, you don't modify your advice to make it more acceptable, I suppose, or more palatable for government consumption or for them to roll with that. So then, were you disappointed when that advice that was in that letter from the acting chief medical officer to the minister Friday of last week was not introduced or even made public until later on this week?
Well, I appreciate government's position on this. What matters is not so much what NPHET advises or government decides, but what people do.
But people can't really, you know, we can't expect people to make decisions when they don't have all the information. And there was some very, very stark figures and projections in that letter that we were not aware of.
Well, as I say, I don't think I was disappointed. I think that the situation is that we offer our advice to government, and government needs to consider how to deal with that advice and how to implement that advice and communicating clearly with the public, as government opted to do through the publication of the framework, was a government decision. And I'll be honest and say I can see the reasons for that decision, the decision to on Tuesday communicate one clear message to the public about what our framework is for the coming 6 months.
Though we lost those very crucial days at a time when we were being told the virus is growing exponentially?
Well, I also think separate from that government decision, people in Dublin and people across the country, through the weekly briefings or twice weekly briefings that the chief medical officer offers to the public, the public will have got clear messages about the need for caution and reducing their contacts. And they've been getting those messages, frankly, since early July, because we've seen the slow resurgence of the virus in phases with major outbreaks in Kildare-Leash and Offaly since July. So there's been a clear and consistent and escalating, I have to say, as the virus surges, message to the public.
In terms of that... What has been done, the new restrictions, the level 3 restrictions that have been introduced, and as you put it, at the harsher end of those level 3 for pubs and restaurants, there is some concern that this is not or can't be completely evidence-based, because we don't know for sure where that 40% community transmission is actually sourced from, can we? Because you yourself, in a very detailed thread on Twitter yesterday, laid out the fact that we don't have a contact tracing resourced well enough to ask people and to interrogate the full history of where people may have contracted the virus.
Yeah, and I fear I may have misrepresented the work of our colleagues in public health, and I apologise to them for that. So let me be clear over a minute or two. First of all, the priority when a case is detected is to go and find the people that they have contacted in the preceding 48 hours, because they're the people that they likely or possibly have infected. So that's the first objective for contact tracing. Public health quite frequently do go back, though, particularly when they're managing larger outbreaks, to find the source of infection. And when they do, they find that the virus was picked up and led to those outbreaks where we gather socially, where we congregate, in our homes, in restaurants, in bars, at sporting events, in fitness studios. So we do have the evidence. What I was trying to point out there was that there will always be many more household outbreaks than there are outbreaks in those settings. So it's to misinterpret the data to say, why are there so few outbreaks in restaurants or bars? If there's one event in a restaurant which leads to 4 or 5 infections, that will lead to 3 or 4 separate household outbreaks with maybe 15 or 20 cases. So you're always going to see lots of cases in households and
that
families.
That may not necessarily have started there.
They didn't start there. They came from those families getting together, and those families either got together at some family social gathering in somebody's house or garden, or in a bar, or in a restaurant. And just as a final point.
Yeah, sorry, just before... Make that point.
Well, not only
point.
Do we have our own evidence, but the international evidence here is compelling that indoor dining and indoor congregation are the major drivers of community transmission. And it's with great sadness. I mean, people's livelihoods depend on that. I have friends in the restaurant industry. It's with great sadness that those restrictions have to be imposed.
But are you
but
saying
I'm certain they have to be?
I'm sorry to go back on this again, Philip, but it is important because the clear impression we had from your tweeting yesterday was that we simply don't have the resources to go back to the historic, to go back right into the history of where people have been for the 5 or 7 days before they start to show symptoms, that at most we maybe go back 48 hours. And that's why we have so much stuff kind of goes into the column of community transmission, because we just don't have enough contact tracers or systems in place to do that huge job of work. Are you saying you have all that data? That there's enough data to absolutely say where this came from? Or are you saying we would never be able to find that out?
Sure. And absolutely. I mean, obviously, the more resources you have, the more cases you're going to be able to track down the origin of. The level of community transmission that we're seeing in Ireland is not unusual when you compare it internationally. And there'll always be a significant proportion of cases that no matter how hard you try, even if you've got huge resources and you're sequencing the genome and all those kinds of things, that you still won't be able to track it down, because people won't, for instance, remember that they were in the place that they picked it up, and they won't report it to you. So there's lots of reasons why we see community transmission. But it's not that when we say community transmission, it's that we don't know where that particular person, what particular venue they picked it up in. We do know in general terms where these people are picking it up, and that's why the interventions are targeted at those locations where we know the virus spreads.
Okay, but where we assume the virus spreads, because of course,
there's
evidence internationally, but we don't have... The official data just shows a very small number emanating from. So we're assuming that a lot of the household transmission. I'm just wondering if we had. Do we need to upgrade our contact tracing? Would that give more evidence to support the decision making? Because the decisions that are coming, that are being made on the basis of this, have such massive impact on so many people and their livelihoods. That would it not? Would you be more comfortable if you could present better evidence in terms of tracing it right back? And if we had a more robust contact tracing system, would that be helpful?
Well, yes. I mean, not only would it be helpful to have more evidence, but there are plans in place to gather more evidence. But we also have to ask ourselves the question, why would congregated settings in this country be any less vulnerable to viral transmission than similar congregated settings in other countries? And I do need to emphasise, we do know, I'll bring you back, it's a misinterpretation of those numbers to say we've got lots of cases in households and families and very few cases in other congregated settings. The disease is amplified in the households, but it originated in the social congregated settings. We know that, so the evidence is there. But the more evidence that you have, the more you can stand over a decision. But I do have to ask you to accept that there is more than sufficient evidence that the virus is transmitting in these congregated settings. And I don't mean to single them out. And I think I want to be clear that it's not the fault of those people. The simple fact is, if there's very low levels of virus in the community, congregated settings, well run, can operate safely. If there's a high level of virus in the community, no matter how well you run your restaurant or your pub or your gym or your home,
you can't
people
avoid.
At random will bring the virus in without their knowledge or your knowledge. It'll spread, and the consequences of that are exponential, quite literally.
Sam McConkie is writing in the Irish Times today. His article has a headline that we're in at the beginning of the second wave in Ireland. Would you characterise where we're at as being at the beginning of a second wave?
Yeah, personally, I don't like the word second wave because people have a sense in their head of something overwhelming heading towards them that's inevitable. It's not inevitable. We're at about 260 cases a day at the moment. The reproduction number we know to be above one, between 1.3 and 1.7. If it's 1.3, by the 14th of October, we'd be seeing 400 cases a day. If it's 1.8, we'd be seeing closer to 1,500 cases a day. If we get it down back below one, it'll tail away slowly. We'd still be seeing about 150 cases a day by the 14th of October. So the next 3 weeks depend entirely on how each and every one of us takes on board our concern about the growing level of the virus and understands and implements the public health advice. So I guess the livelihoods of restaurateurs and publicans are not only in their hands, they're in all of our hands. And our public health and safety, the future of education in our schools, all of those things depend, unfortunately, and I don't mean to hector people, but we do really need to treat seriously that request encapsulated in the restrictions, that we really need to cut down our social contacts to those that are really important priorities and be careful. If we do that, we've shown it before in March and April. We showed it in Kildare, Leash and Offaly collectively as people, though the challenge we face in Dublin in some sense is bigger. We can do it. And I just really urge people to put their shoulder to the wheel on this one, get the disease back under control, and then we will be in a position to socialise, albeit less than we would have been used to last year, but socialise safely again.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Professor Philip Nolan, many, many thanks for joining us with that this afternoon. I just want to go to Dara O'Brien, Minister, now.
Sure.
Publicans and restaurateurs found out about this from a leak reported by Micheál Lehane on the 9 o'clock news on Friday night. Was that an appropriate way, if this had to be done, was that an appropriate way to go about your business?
No, well, we didn't leak anything. I didn't leak anything. I think the government have been very deliberate in the plan that's put forward. It's really tough, particularly on the hospitality sector. I have friends working in that sector, I have business owners and employers in that sector. You've listened to Professor Nolan very clearly there over the last few minutes and intently. If I read the letter that NPHET that will be published or is published now of the 17th, it's really, really clear that urgent action had to be taken in the interest of public health. That hurts certain sectors in particular. And that's why we're bringing in particular supports for that sector here in Dublin, an additional 30 million plus an extra 5 million for the arts sector. These aren't easy decisions. And I think all of us realise that we have to put public health and safety and people's lives first. We have had, you know, over nearly,
did
nearly
you feel that social solidarity that was very, very strong in the first months of this pandemic? Do you feel it cracking a bit? Like, you've been out and about in your constituency for the last couple of days. What are people saying to you?
No, I think, this is really tough because it's been longer, I think, this has gone on than many people would have thought if we go way back to March with the initial full lockdown. And this isn't a lockdown. Like, this is managed and most sectors will continue. Our schools are back. There's an element of normality. And obviously, look, no, this virus doesn't, respect plans in that sense. So we have to be nimble. We have to be adaptable. But you're asking me about social solidarity. Yes, it is there. I think that what people need, though, and some people are just there is a frustration. There's a tiredness. What I'm asking people and what the Taoiseach last night and again today is to ask people to re-engage with it. And they are, because people realise how serious this is. We've had nearly 1,800 people have lost their lives through this virus, 32,000 infections. Working together, we will suppress the virus. We can improve it so we can go back to level two. And all of us need to work together on it. And I am pleased this week, genuinely over the last day or two, to see that opposition as well have rowed in behind that.
And that's, let's talk about that for a minute.
Can I just conclude on that, because I do welcome that, because there were some cracks there, and that's not something that we need to see, particularly in the teeth of a public health pandemic. So it is important that all of us, as best as possible within the Dáil, work together in the interest of the public. And that's what the public expect of us,
Okay, let me bring Eoin O'Brien in, because Certainly, I spoke to David Cullinan in another studio in this building on Wednesday night, and he was very adamant that it was a step too far. The pubs needed to be open, the restaurants, it was, you know, that we were getting news in that this was coming down the tracks. And certainly at that stage, the Sinn Féin position was this is too much. The pubs and restaurants deserve to be allowed to open. You changed that.
Well, it wasn't just that it was our position. If you look at the plan that the government outlined earlier in the week, both in level 3 and in level 4, restaurants and pubs with certain restrictions would remain open. And there was a clear sense from everybody that while restrictions would increase, there would still be the ability for people to trade, the ability for people to work and
to
earn.
But even after it then emerged and that that was not going to be the case in Dublin.
The difficulty is we only found out the formal position last night. And like Dara, look, we're all talking to people affected by this. And for people right across Dublin, just as it was in Laois, Offaly and Kildare, this is going to be a really tough 3 weeks. But I was talking, for example, to traders last night, suppliers into the restaurant industry, who now have, individual traders, €30,000 worth of perishable stock and they don't have anywhere to put it. And part of our difficulty is this, because as opposition, we want to be responsible, but we also don't write the government a blank cheque. And at an earlier stage in this process, there would have been weekly meetings between the Taoiseach, the Chief Medical Officer, the Minister for Health, party leaders and health spokespeople. That doesn't happen. We wanted a full Oireachtas debate on this plan during the week. That was prevented by government. So, yes, we need to work together, but we do need to ensure that everybody has
maximum...
But
you did change your tack on this during the week, Eoghan Brin. There's no doubt about it.
I don't think so. I think we have been.
Let me answer the question.
We have been arguing for some time, and our argument was consistent with the plan that the government announced earlier this week. But Professor Nolan has clearly actually suggested a different position, which is we felt there are ways of doing this. Now, having said all of that, the public advice is there. The plan is now in place. And what we all have to do is come out as quickly as possible with an exit plan, which means government needs to give more support to industry and increased tracing and contact.
The up-to-date NPHET letter, and look, I appreciate what Eoghan's saying. There has been a change and I welcome the change. Now, I don't want to get into a party political debate on COVID because people don't want to hear that and we don't need to go there. What I would say is the letter, the most up-to-date letter from NPHET that we got, that we had a cabinet meeting yesterday, is dated the 17th of September. And in that it is extremely clear in that letter that we had to take urgent action. So there wasn't a position or a time frame whereby, you know, we could roll this in over a 4 or 5 day period.
But we know that there was a lot of urgency in the previous letter on the previous Friday, and we were about sitting on that for five days.
I think we didn't do that. What we did is to publish a clear plan for the public, and that's there for people to see.
But as I said to you, Casey,
this is a very serious situation. People's lives are at risk here. Now, in relation to the businesses that are particularly affected,
I'm going to stop you there because I have Donal O'Keefe.
Well, I know you do, but I'm just going to say this. It's important people know that the letter from NPHET came on the 17th. We had a meeting the next day, that we approved these straight away. We had a cabinet subcommittee met, the full cabinet met, and they were rolled out and the changes came in at midnight last night. That is not delaying anything. That's putting public health first.
I need to bring Donal O'Keefe in. Donal, Chief Executive of the Licensed Fitness Association. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Donal, you've had some time to come to terms with this news overnight, but what are you hearing from your members now, particularly about those who were stocked up again, once again, ready to open the doors on Monday?
Well, there's a huge range of emotions. The overwhelming one is fear. Fear of the future, fear for the sustainability of our businesses, fear for our staff and their families. We're in an extraordinary situation. We feel that NPHET have singled out the pub trade. Wet pubs have been closed consistently and continuously since the 15th of March. They have made no contribution to the infection rate in Dublin or anywhere else because they've been closed now for 189 days.
But you heard, I'm sure, there before you came on air, Donal, you heard Professor Philip Nolan saying that the international evidence is indisputable, that these are the settings in which this virus spreads if it's active in the community.
We're also aware that 3,500 pubs that serve food, the entire national restaurant sector, hotel bars opened at the end of June, and we saw relatively stable infection rates through July and August. I think the question we need to ask ourselves is what has changed in Dublin in September to drive the number of infections so high? We are greatly concerned by it. We take our public health responsibilities very seriously. Compliance by our members with those guidelines has been extraordinarily high, as evidenced by the Garda report. But clearly there has been a change in dynamic. And we think it's incumbent upon NPHET and the government to show us where those additional infection rates are coming from, to conclusively prove the source and deal with it there. We're not altogether convinced, and I don't think the public are convinced, that pubs and restaurants are the source here, given that they've been open since the end of June.
But did what Philip Nolan, Professor Philip Nolan, was saying there, did that give you any further insight into why those decisions were, or those recommendations were made to the government?
I mean, what he's saying makes a lot of sense, but I think the question we would ask in that context is, why didn't this happen in July then? We've been open since the 29th of June in terms of pubs that serve food and restaurants. Why has it got so bad in September? And I think we
all
see...
Professor Nolan said, it has been on the rise since the beginning, since late June, the beginning of July, and it has been slowly accelerating as we went through those weeks and into September. So it hasn't just something that kind of arrived at our doors in September, to be fair.
But he also said he wasn't sure of the exact source and community transmission. We've been expressing concern for weeks
I don't want to misrepresent what Philip Nolan has been telling us. I think what he was saying is that they are confident that this is where this can be traced back to.
But as I say, we are also confident there's a lot of other sources out there, and bigger sources than the pub and restaurant sector. The document that was published on Tuesday was around living with COVID. We don't see that. Dublin hospitality sector is not in level 3. Wet pubs are not even on the roadmap. They're closed entirely. Even at level 5, they should be open for takeaway. And the pub and restaurant sector that have indoor dining options closed now is at level 4. So we have a sector lockdown. We will play our part here. We will follow the guidelines. But clearly, it's enormously damaging for our sector, for our sustainability. We were in the throes of a very difficult recovery. The city centre business environment is a disaster zone for us. There's no footfall in the city in the evenings. And in the middle of trying to rebuild our business, we're now shut down at practically no notice for a minimum of 3 weeks. And I think one of the things that's really worrying and frustrating publicans in Dublin this morning is we'd have no confidence we'll get to get going again in 3 weeks.
Who do you turn to now for support, though? Because, I mean, as I say, there was some noises from Sinn Féin earlier this week that they were supporting the pub trade to get back into business. But I think that has shifted again. So do you feel isolated now in this regard?
Well, we certainly feel very let down by how we've been treated throughout. I mean, pubs should have opened last July. We've been given 4 separate dates to reopen, 20th of July, 10th of August, 31st of August and 21st of September. And none of those have been stuck to. So it's very hard to have confidence. And while we know there's a €30 million package announced, mm-hmm. we've no sight of the detail of how that will be paid out. We've no sight of the amounts that individuals will get. And I'm pretty certain, without doing the analysis, it's simply not going to be sufficient, given the precarious position we're in.
Well, I'd like to assure Donal and a lot of pub owners and restaurant owners that this is the absolute focus of government to support them through this really difficult time. The virus, as I said, doesn't respect plans as they're set down. We're doing our best as possible. And I know publicans and restaurateurs as well, that this was a big and really difficult decision that affects them greatly. So the €30 million focused additional support for that sector will be worked through this week. And Donal and his members will be crucially important to that. We'll continue. We reopen the PUP payment.
Many of the workers who have been laid off today,
will receive lower PUP payments
because government has slashed the supports for low income workers across the sector.
I'm going to say this to you: the changes to the PUP payment, which has been
unjustifiable, and will cause real hardship for working people, Dara.
Own solidarity in the teeth of the pandemic has just been shown there again. What I would actually say to you is the Taoiseach already this morning has said that we're going to focus specifically on those affected in this sector around the PUP.
He used the term
payment.
That we would review. Well,
Let's be fair about it. If you look at the rates that are there,
is there a chance that they will be restored?
Hold on. What you asked me is there a chance they're being reviewed? When a review is happening, of course, there's a chance that happening. particularly focused on the sector that's so badly affected. Now, 3.5 billion
that's
euro.
That's no use for people over the next 3 weeks.
Second.
While you're reviewing it, they will be on less income.
These people have debts and rent and bills, Dara. I am well aware of that, Owen. And
then
what I'm
why
saying
did you support the cutting of the payment? It's a disgrace.
Do you mind actually letting me speak, Owen? I'm not going to let you shout over me. What I'd say to you is 3.5 billion euro has been paid out in PUP payments as well. We're going to extend that into next year and the employer wage subsidy scheme.
Which has also been reduced.
So we have to make sure that it's sustainable in how it's paid out, that we're supporting people both in employment and those who've lost their jobs. People in my own family, my own friends who've lost their jobs. So what I'm saying to you, just to be very clear,
are you saying, are you leaving the door open here today that PUP payment in certain sectors badly hit may be restored to the full amount?
Yes, it could very well be. I want to be very clear on that because that review is happening. The Taoiseach has said that as well, and we've been very clear. So again, we're not going to play politics with people's livelihoods as others have shown they're doing. I want to bring
Róisín Seartáil in because Róisín is not in this studio with us. She's in an adjacent studio. Róisín Seartáil, co-leader of the Social Democrats. What do you make of that, Róisín?
So, Katie, I just want to make it clear at the start that I and the Social Democrats support the actions that have been announced last night because of the fact that we're at a crisis point in Dublin. The figures are absolutely on a knife edge, and we will certainly be encouraging everybody to follow the guidance very clearly. We really have, you know, a very short opportunity now to work together to drive down the rates of the virus. And it's absolutely critical that we concentrate on that over the next 3 weeks. In addition to that, obviously, it's important that the businesses that have been so devastated by this overnight decision need to be fully supported. And those supports need to be available early. And the very many people who are being laid off now this weekend also have to have access to income supports as a matter of urgency. I have to, though, say that there are serious questions about how we came to this point, where we're at a crisis stage. I have been asking over recent months about what exactly the government strategy is in terms of responding to the huge threat from COVID. And key decisions, especially, you know, very fundamental decisions as we're seeing in recent days, must be data driven. And it's very hard to know what is the course of action being pursued by government other than crisis responses. And it is not a sustainable strategy for us to lock down the country or parts of the country every time there's an upsurge in the virus. The key thing, which again I've been saying from the very beginning, the key thing is that the government must ensure that the whole testing and tracing system is right, that it's properly resourced, it's agile, it can respond quickly to outbreaks, and it can track down the virus. That hasn't been the case. Testing and tracing have been problematic from the very beginning. And in spite of the fact that, you know, during the summer months, there was thankfully a lull in the virus and there was an opportunity to actually get the system right, that opportunity wasn't taken.
So, 84,000 tests in the last 7 days.
Excuse me, Dara, you've had enough time now.
Róisín, no, but can I ask you, Róisín, just what is the capacity? Because I heard the Taoiseach there on the Brendan O'Connor show saying that we have a capacity now of 15,000 tests a day. Now, I don't think we've ever done that. So the questions are, why, if we have that capacity, why aren't we doing that many tests?
We have been told, Katie, for a few months now that there is a capacity of 100,000 tests a week. That figure has never been reached. I think last week it may have got to around 80,000. It has never been fully reached. The other thing that is very concerning, obviously, is the information that came from Professor Nolan yesterday, that we actually don't have a fully functioning tracing system.
He did say he may have slightly misrepresented that situation, that in some cases they are able to put those resources in and get that, but not in every case.
Katie, we were told yesterday by Professor Nolan, and to quote him, he said, we would like to go back and find out where people are getting the virus, but we don't have the time or resources. Now, that is an astounding comment to make. Look, you know, we have to be able to identify where the virus is being transmitted. And there are umpteen potential places, like, is it on public transport? Is it people watching a match on the sidelines? Is it in workplaces? Is it, you know, is it in any one of those many places? Is it in restaurants or in bars? Is it due to foreign travel? Now, unless we can actually identify where the transmission is taking place, you know, it is guesswork essentially after that.
Okay, Roisin, I'm going to have to cut across you there, but I will come back to you, but I'm told I have to go to an ad break now.
Tweet at Saturday RTE.
And you're welcome back. And I want to bring in Colette Brown now, Colette Barrister and columnist with the Irish Independent. Colette, a lot of talk this week about, after that really dramatic, to use a kind word, I suppose, Tuesday, in terms of the handling of this. And then a lot of blowback from the government side about how the opposition were engaging with, you know, the pandemic issues this week. Where are we now at the end of the week? Has the government restored some semblance of authority over the situation?
Well, I think they did a better job yesterday than they have been doing up to date, but that isn't a ringing endorsement of their performance by any means. And I think it's quite glib, actually, for government representatives to say that the opposition trying to critique their handling of the coronavirus crisis, to say that they're kind of undermining the public health efforts or they're undermining the people that work in that system. It's not undermining the government's efforts to try to suggest things that would maybe make their efforts work better. It's not undermining national efforts to say that the track and trace system or the test and trace system could be better. Yes, are people working very hard in the system? Yes, they are. Are people individually doing a lot of work? Yes, they are. Is it where it needs to be? No, it isn't. I mean, we have medical scientists who are working in labs who are complaining that they're under-resourced. We have public health doctors saying that they're perhaps going to ballot for industrial or strike action by the end of the year unless their concerns are met. There are a lot of issues that have to be dealt with within the system. And I think the opposition, I don't like government claims that the opposition is trying to politicise this crisis. I mean, we're talking about political decisions being made by a government on foot of public health advice, yes, and having listened to the public health advice, but essentially these are political decisions, and in a democratic republic you're going to have an opposition that's going to be holding a government to account.
I think, in fairness, we know that there's a difference between critiquing and holding the government to account, which I welcome, and that's a good thing.
But there was earlier this week when we were getting those leaks, particularly from your own parliamentary party meetings, very extensive leaks, where there seemed to be, it was everyone's fault but Fianna Fáil's.
No, I don't think that's not a fair representation of what took place. What I'd say, to go back to Colette's point, there is no fear in government whatsoever from government being held to account by any opposition. What we're simply saying, and I welcome it, was the change later on this week to row in behind the plan and the approach, because this is tough. It's tough for our people. It's too important where we find ourselves right now across the country, not just in Dublin, that we don't work together in the best interests of the country. That does not mean that I'm not open to criticism. We've had debates this week. I'll be criticised every single day for what I do by some, and that's okay. That's a democracy. What we look is constructive criticism too. What I don't like and what I didn't like.
Criticism is in the eye of the beholder.
No, of course it is. Yeah, but no. What I'm saying is there's a difference between criticism and maybe some things that may be seen as undermining an approach. Now that
which you think Sinn Féin
We've moved. I think it was very clear from some of the comments, particularly from David Cullinan, their health spokesperson, Piers Doherty, their deputy leader, and indeed Mary Lou MacDonald as well, to a degree. But that's moved on, and I welcome that.
So what specifically are you saying was undermining the health message? There was
questioning of the basis for the decisions nearly on the public, particularly around the bars and the restaurants. You've heard Professor Nolan very clearly at the start of this show talking, and that is not a reflection on the bar or restaurant owners themselves, who have done everything they can right now. But the idea that transmission at home just occurs in the home itself has been blown out of the water, frankly. So I think we're in a different stage now. I welcome that. I think the people welcome that too, because they're behind the measures, as tough as they are. It's recognised that they need to happen.
Okay, you've made that point.
Let me give Darren, the government, some constructive criticism and suggestions, right? So the first thing is, and Roisin is absolutely right, we need to increase our testing and tracing capacity. And while I welcome the fact that the plan includes additional staff, that should be done some time ago. But for example, one of the weaknesses of the plan is there are no targets, either for the number of tests or the turnaround time, despite the fact that the Oireachtas COVID-19 committee has recommended a 24-hour turnaround time. We also need government to engage directly with the sectors affected by the increased restrictions in Dublin,
and provide
a package. And what I'm hearing is the package that's currently on the table is not enough, and more will need to be done. But two other things need to be done urgently.
Where are you hearing that from?
We from the industry, and they've made comments about this just before. But two other things we need is this. We need the government to move urgently on people, for example, who have six month mortgage moratoria because they go into a seventh month. Let me make the point.
I'm not going to stop you there, because I just explained to people. So those moratoria are about to run out.
And if they go into a seventh month, they will go into official mortgage distress. Mm-hmm. That needs to be changed and changed urgently. And we also need the minister beside me to reconsider the issue of temporary bans on rent increases, on evictions and notice to quit, particularly where there's the potential for further restrictions as we have now. The primary reason the minister gave when he removed the protections for the vast majority of renters in July was that we were moving out of the more restrictive phase of the virus. Now that we're moving back into that restrictive phase, those key protections for renters, the vast majority of whom have lost them, need to get them back, particularly in Dublin.
Very quickly, because I want to bring Roisin in on this as well. But just in that line, if we are back to a place where it was considered necessary to have those protections in place for renters.
I keep that under review on a daily basis.
No, sorry, Katie.
I'm not being flippant about it. I'm telling you, I think these things need to be watched carefully. I brought in very significant protections for those affected most in the Residential Tenancies Amendment Act 2020, which came into effect on the 2nd of August, which, by the way, was a much more robust way of protecting tenants whose income had been affected by COVID, losing their jobs, who had COVID.
The vast majority aren't protected, Dara.
You're
misleading the public, Dara.
I'm actually not, Owen. You voted against. Your party voted against.
Because I want to protect all renters, not just a few. Dara.
You voted against all those measures. Furthermore, you put amendments down that would have made it more difficult for people to seek that protection. Sinn Féin put an amendment down that people would have to declare themselves homeless
again,
to this
that's
bill.
That's not a fair representation of the position. Absolutely
so they're in
not.
Place now. I every single week, the start of each week, I have a homeless task force that I chair myself, and we watch very carefully what's happening in that sector.
You're not doing anything, Dara. People are getting notices to quit. People are getting rent increases.
Okay, you know what, Dara?
I do want to say one thing, because he's misrepresented what protections are there. Under the act that I brought in, anyone who self-declares and signs a declaration is protected fully against evictions up to the 11th of January next year, whose income has been affected and they may fall into arrears. Now, what I've said very clearly, because I don't want Sinn Féin to misrepresent this either, is of course I watch this daily. So if the situation gets worse, there are other measures that I can bring in, which I will, but I've got to make sure that I balance that also, and that they're legal what we do. Sinn Féin brought a rent bill in on Thursday that doesn't even mention evictions. Nothing about evictions, nothing about
it's
COVID.
To ban rent increases for three years, which is urgently necessary.
It didn't, urgently necessary for hard-pressed renters. They're increasing rents in the north in 12 days'
time.
Not in the private rental sector.
I want to bring Roisin.
Roisin.
Yes.
Please, Roisin.
Look, people are in all kinds of difficulties as a result of COVID, you know, through absolutely no fault of their own. And it's essential that the minister is absolutely on top of this in terms of preventing any evictions over, I would say, at least for the next year. I would also say in relation to rent caps and mortgage breaks. You know, we cannot force people into a situation where, you know, as a result of losing their jobs, that they're going to find themselves homeless. So there needs to be ongoing review of this, and there needs to be action. And it's not enough just, I think, to say that for the minister to say he's looking at this. No. There has to be certainty.
We actually have protections in place
because
now.
Because people are in terribly precarious situations. Mm-hmm.
And I agree with Roisin. We have protections in place
in
right
now. In terms of the mortgage breaks, is Pascal Donoghue talking to the banks? What's happening in relation to that?
And Pascal Donoghue and Michael McGrath are talking to the banks, and that's a fair point, because the mortgage break, the 6 months runs up. I have a role in that as well, in the Rebuilding Ireland Home Loan, which is the mortgage that is given through local authorities in relation to further breaks there. So that they are
okay,
in contact.
Let Roisin back in.
Just with all due respects, again, this is more of looking at and talking to. You know, the banks should be told. It's as simple as that. Everybody is already paying double the rate, interest rate that they should be paying relative to other European countries.
I just answered the question.
The banks need to be told
and they
to
are
play their
to the
part.
Banks. Yep. And look,
and they'll keep talking.
Are they
keep
asking nicely,
and they
or
will,
are they telling them?
They will keep
Minister.
Talking to the banks while mortgage holders will be screwed by the banks as they have been for the last 6 months.
In the mortgage that I personally have responsibility for as Minister, the Rebuilding Ireland Home Loan, there's no additional interest charged, no interest charge in the period of the break as well. And I would like to extend that further for a further period for those who've lost their jobs and can't pay their mortgage. What I'm saying to you is that the Minister for Finance, the Minister for Public Expenditure and Reform are in regular contact with the banks, and this is being discussed with them.
In relation to the winter plan, of course, we're all the big worries. You know, we did the first phase of this pandemic in the springtime, nice weather, you know, very little else floating around in terms of viruses and that. Facing into the winter with this second phase that we're now heading into, I think people were quite shocked to hear in recent weeks how little extra capacity has been put into the system since we came out the sharp end of the last fires in terms of critical care beds.
Well, yeah, well, the critical care beds have doubled since the beginning of the pandemic. If you talk about capacity, it's something I'm looking at, particularly in my own sector and for emergency accommodation for homeless, is to drive up. We actually have additional capacity right now. We're working on our winter plan. We're working with health on that. And that's why I, as Housing Minister, put out a call to housing where we're buying more properties to fill that gap, where I'm putting 2,500 units back into use, what's called voids, which are the vacant properties that are there, put 40 million in the stimulus plan. Every local authority has a specific target from me set, and every single week they're reporting back to me. So what we need is permanent stock. Yes, a robust plan. There's 600 million euro going into the winter plan, and the HSE and ourselves on the housing side are working together on that, and I have additional capacity already for emergency accommodation and health supports for the most vulnerable, which is really important.
Which is really important, I'm not disputing that in any way, but I'm talking about the scenarios where we're now hearing that hospital COVID wards are once again being put in place in several of our hospitals in Dublin.
Well, we have to build
we're
that
once again going to be getting those numbers every day for ICU.
And that goes right back to why we took the...
Well, I just want to ask Roisin Shortall, who is very familiar with the infrastructure around health. Roisin Shortall, are we in a good place going into this winter with this virus?
No, we're not. In short, you mentioned the winter plan. We were promised that actually on Thursday. For some reason, it hasn't materialised yet. Hopefully, it will be out early next week. But, you know, the fact is that COVID has exposed major problems within our public health service. And, you know, if the whole question of how we provide a public health service was addressed in the context of the Sláinte Care Plan. That was launched 3 years ago. All parties are supposed to be signed up to it. If we had started the implementation of that at that stage in 2017, we wouldn't be where we are now. But, you know, we have seen now how COVID has exposed massive problems within our health service in terms of social care, in terms of complete underfunding of home care. And
do you get any sense that these are being, we know they've been exposed, but are they being addressed?
So there was 40 million euro
allocated they have been mentioned. We will have to wait and see what happens. But, you know, you mentioned, Katie, yourself, the intensive care beds. Like, it was highlighted a long time ago that we need to double the number of ICU beds in this country. We're hugely short relative to other countries. And yet, you know, we haven't actually done that.
Well,
a small number of
additional ICU beds have been
provided, but we haven't even got to the point of the recommended number pre-COVID. So, you know, all of these things now are on a knife edge, and again they emphasise the lack of investment in good public services.
€2 billion this year,
and whether that's healthcare or childcare or housing, all of these frailties.
That's it. Apologies, Roisin, but we're well over time. I want to thank my panel for being with us today, and Professor Nolan for joining us on the line, and Donal O'Keefe. But that's all we have time for. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll be back here same time, same place next Saturday.
Saturday with Katie Hannan. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player app.
And Saturday with Katie Hannan was produced by Mary O'Hagan. The broadcast coordinator was Elaine Conlon. Research was by Andrew Fleming. And sound was by Sheila Neveal.